Good evening. It is just 6 p.m. top of the hour here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM radio. And just a reminder that we do have the new WEFT app that you can let me introduce myself before I get into all that. Exciting house cleaning, house public service announcements, all those types of things of what's been going on here at WFT. Let me just first say, my name is Ben. This is the program we are at. I am live in the studio. Today's date is March 10th. Just a reminder, it is tax season, so hopefully you're getting your taxes situations, calling up your accountants, and getting that all that fun stuff sorted out. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prayer Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. If you're having trouble listening to WEFT on 90.1 FM, while we are working to make the necessary repairs to get the FM radio signal broadcasting loud and static-free, there are other ways to listen to your community radio station. You can stream the station live on our website at weft.org, and that is 24/7 available, stream available. You can listen from your new mobile phone with the new WEFT app, available for both iPhones and Android phones. The new WEFT app is free to download in either the Apple App Store or Google's Play Store. Just search for WEFT FM. You can listen to WEFT live anytime from anywhere in the world. You can go back and listen to shows in the archives, such as my show, where we are at. I know the show after this is Radio Theater. That should be up on there. And, you can discover recent playlists and what just played on WEFT. You can find community information. You can also make a donation and record a message or request and send it directly to WEFT. If you have a red car, an old car. Sorry, I was mixing these. Do you have an old car? I guess it could be red. The color doesn't really matter, though. Truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of. You could donate any old vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. Make arrangements on the website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WFT to receive the proceeds. Today's March 10th, right? The Red Herring Reunion, that's why I said red when I mixed that up. Tuesday is March 11th and April 8th. There's the Red Herring Reunion. They take cash only. The Red Herring Reunion, March Nachos, Soup and Stew, Live Music Rooted in Love. The Red Herring Reunion, Tuesdays, March 11th and April 8th. So that's tomorrow. Other than that, and of course there's the Rose Bowl Tavern. They're down there in Urbana. You can look at what's going on at the Rose Bowl. Let's see, this is March, right? definitely feels like spring, and I was gonna look in a little bit the weather. But yeah, if you're wondering what's going on at the Rose Bowl Comedy, usually there's a trivia night is usually Wednesdays, jazz, and followed by jazz jam at 10 p.m. Trivia night starting at 7:30 p.m. But if you want to know what's going on at the Rose Bowl, go to www.rosebowltavern.com. Just a little weather report, since it's quite pretty warm. We've had a dip in the spring, although and according to it's about 68 now. It'll dip into the mid 50s later tonight. Might get all the way down into the upper 40s in the morning. So when you wake up for work or for class, it'll be about 47, 48 degrees. And then it'll get up all the way up to the 60, upper 60s in the afternoon. Then kind of dip down into the 40s tomorrow night. So just a little quick weather report. Not sure if there's really anything that stands out. Doesn't look like we'll be getting any rain. According to the forecast, now that could change. But it looks like no rain for the next week or so. So let's see. I wanted to talk about the Champaign Regional Planning Commission. The Regional Planning Commission has a number of services available, community services, such as low income home energy assistance. Now, might not be, then again, I don't know, it might not need that given the weather, but although it still will get a little bit chilly at night, but that is a service that they have available. They also have safety, lighting, energy efficient program, senior services, transportation assistance, youth assessment, and do a number of projects, economic development, Champaign-Urbana Urban Area Human Services Transportation Plan. They also have job employment and business services and job opportunities at the CCR. So that's the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. I'm not sure if you want to look at their calendar and see what they have going on. Maybe I'll do that. I have it essentially. Doing that, but you can go to their website, ccrpc.org. Their hours of operation are normal business hours, 8 a.m., 4:30 p.m., Monday through Friday. They are located at 1776 East Washington Street in Urbana, 217-328-3313. If you want to know more about the services and projects that they do, and the kind of the work that they do in the community, that they are available, and I think it's important to know about that because they do a lot of I respect and admire all and appreciate all the work they do in the community. There are municipal elections going on. I believe April 1st is Tuesday, April 1st is the municipal election. If you would like to know more about what's on the ballot, I know Champaign School Board, City Council elections will be on the ballot. There's the League of Women Voters of Champaign County. Their website, lwvchampaigncounty.org, is the URL, and they have a number of number of great things like local issues, how to get involved, get out the registering to vote. There's also the Champaign County Clerk website. If you go to champaigncountyclerk.com, about registering to vote, where you go to vote, how that is information that is all available. Let me. And of course, the circuit clerk is Champaign County Circuit Clerk. That's located at 101 East Main Street in Urbana. I'm trying to see. I know I heard on the radio on right here that there's the school Champaign County School Board. That's going to be on the ballot, and that's very important. I'm trying to see if there's any debate with the League of Women Voters. There might be a debate or a forum that they've had, or a candidate questionnaire. A lot of that, that information about candidates and issues is on lwvchampaigncounty.org. That's the website for the League of Women Voters of Champaign County, which is a nonpartisan grassroots organization that encourages informed and active participation in government by providing voter education and increasing understanding of major public policy issues. That's essentially all I have in terms of what I wanted to say live on air before I start up program that I have. This is the broadcast. This is I believe the broadcast from last week because of what's going on with the important issues such as social programs such as Medicare, Medicaid, and specifically Social Security. That's been what's been going on that with the current president and administration. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker, do not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WFT associates. So this is should be queued up, the broadcast with Brad Friedman.
You say there won't be any cuts to entitlements, but on Friday, Elon Musk, who President Trump has, of course, put in charge of making cuts all across the government, called Social Security, quote, the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. Mr. Speaker, is that a sign that Social Security is Elon Musk's next target?
Good question. Answer? Yes, it is.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Let's discuss.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York, WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. The nation, the world, in fact, is still reeling from what many are describing as the Oval Office ambush by Donald Trump and his vice president, J.D. Vance, against President Vladimir Zelensky of our ally, or at least our previous ally, Ukraine, on Friday. An ambush that Donald Trump held on television for some reason, as Zelensky accepted an invitation to the White House. In the midst of 3 years of war, 3 years of courageous leadership on his part in his own home country, repelling the ongoing invasion of his sovereign democratic state by Russia. He was here to sign an agreement to allow the U.S. to access Ukraine's natural resources in exchange for the help apparently already granted by the U.S., even as the Trump administration refused and is apparently still refusing to offer security guarantees to Ukraine in any peace deal or ceasefire deal that may be struck, as the Trump administration now seems to be representing Russia's interest in the conflict. I hope to get to that and your calls in response to this really incredible moment in history where it seems the U.S. has switched sides now in the war against a longtime ally and against our allies in the European Union for the first time in about 80 years following World War II. If you're in our live Southern California listening area and you want to ring in on that spectacle, either for or against, I suppose, I hope to open the phones to you a little bit later at 818-985-5735. But first today, Trump's escalating initiative to drastically cut the federal workforce here in the U.S. has now reached the Social Security Administration. The New York Times reported late on Friday, describing it as a crucial program that keeps millions of older Americans out of poverty. The Times confirmed the administration said it is planning to reduce the critical agency's headcount by more than 12%. The Social Security Administration sends about 73 million retired and disabled beneficiaries more than $126 billion each month and has said it plans to cut roughly 7,000 workers from its workforce.
And this at a time when Social Security offices locally and across the country are already understaffed.
Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Reporting from our friend David Dayan, in fact, at the American Prospect, in advance of the coverage by the Times and other outlets who picked up on the Prospect's reporting, suggests the cuts could be far deeper and indeed far more widely spread. The Social Security Administration is embarking on a, quote, agency-wide organizational restructuring that will include significant workforce reductions, according to an email sent to employees last Thursday evening, and obtained by The Prospect. The email suggests that entire components of SSA, whose staffing is already at a 50-year low, would be abolished, with subsequent reduction in force orders still to come. Last Wednesday, Dayan was the first to report that Acting Commissioner of Social Security Leland Dudek had demanded that managers present him with a workforce reduction plan of up to 50%. The email obtained by The Prospect the next day is consistent with that desire, and no components or positions were accepted from it, writes Dayan. It would be difficult to achieve large-scale reductions in force, he reports, without impacting staff at the more than 1,200 field offices across the country. Already one large hearing office in White Plains, New York, has been shuttered, and there are unclear plans for other lease terminations on the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, website as of last week. SSA field offices where seniors, people with disabilities, and survivors whose parents have died can sign up for benefits and get information. They are one of the most one of the government's most prominent public-facing initiatives. Social Security had 1,232 field offices at the end of 2023. These offices, which see on average close to 120,000 visitors per day, provide customer service for individuals signing up for Social Security and Medicare, as well as applying for disability or survivor benefits. But the initiative at SSA, writes Dayan, may conflict with President Trump's vow on the campaign trail to not touch Social Security, the bedrock social insurance program for the elderly. Reducing service at frontline offices in particular would impact potentially millions of people. SSA is also trying to incorporate a new benefit expansion signed by President Biden last December amid the chaotic potential staff turnover. That could delay those new benefits for teachers and firefighters and police officers. Quote, not touching Social Security is not the reality of this administration, said a source familiar with the discussions at SSA in a message obtained by The Prospect. Looking for government to fail and be replaced by private industry appears to be the goal, said the source. The potential mass firing is consistent with plans being advanced throughout the government to slash the federal workforce, Dayan observes. Alex Lawson of the advocacy group Social Security Works told The Prospect, quote, the ongoing bloodbath at the Social Security Administration has only one goal, the total annihilation of Social Security. This is Wall Street and the billionaires destroying Social Security so that they can give themselves trillions in tax handouts, he said. Sources have speculated to The Prospect that the terminations of workers and closures of field offices are being done piecemeal in order to avoid headlines of tens of thousands of jobs lost. According to those sources, the plan is to fire 50% of the workers in little buckets, so nobody knows what they are doing. Well, hopefully everyone will soon know what they are doing, thanks in no small part to Dayan's reporting here, which has now largely been confirmed by a number of larger corporate media outlets, sometimes with credit, sometimes not, from AP to the New York Times to the Washington Post to CNBC. Joining us now is David Dayan, investigative financial journalist, author, and award-winning executive editor of the nonprofit news outlet, The American Prospect. David Dayan, congrats on the scoop, my friend, and thanks for joining us again to discuss them on the broadcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Brad.
Listen, before we get into some of the specifics of these proposed or really threatened cuts to Social Security, I think it's important to note, especially since Elon Musk and Trump have been repeating lies over and over again about huge waste, fraud, and abuse at SSA. Speaker Mike Johnson claimed over the weekend on Meet the Press that Musk is finding, quote, huge amounts of waste, fraud, and abuse at Social Security. It's actually one of the most efficient operations in the federal government, no?
Yeah, I would call these assertions by Johnson or Musk to be lies, frankly. Social Security has an administrative overhead that really translates to about 1% of all the money in the system. So for every dollar that's spent on administrative costs of getting the money out, $99 are gotten out to beneficiaries across the nation, millions of them. And in the entire history of Social Security, not a single payment has been late. The idea that there's mass fraud or waste in the system is really a misinterpretation of code that has been part of Social Security's internal information technology system for a long time. There are a lot of people labeled as allegedly being 150 years old, but not a single one has been paid a benefit. Mm. So it's really a pack of distortions to justify these really damaging cuts that are being proposed.
Now, as you note in your reporting, Social Security is currently operating with about 7,000 fewer employees than it did just a decade ago, suggesting also that this is not some bloated big government operation, but one that has already been scaling back over the last decade for good or ill. The notion, I think, that a lot of people hear Musk, hear Trump, oh, there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government. It must be terrible over at Social Security. There really is. There may be evidence of that somebody comes forward. But just to be clear, for now, no such evidence, correct?
Yeah, and there is about a 50-year low in terms of the number of employees mm-hmm. at the Social Security Administration. Those, even before Donald Trump was inaugurated, people familiar with the SSA would say that it was in an operational crisis. Mm-hmm. And that simply comes from a lack of manpower to do the large and important work that needs to be done. Every day in America, 10,000 people turn 65. Mm-hmm. The needs on the disability side have gone up year after year after year. And there simply just aren't enough people to process systems, many of which are still manual, many of which require humans to make adjudications. For example, if there are disability claimants out there, you have to mm-hmm. decide whether or not they actually meet the requirements of the program. So the Social Security system, you know, the people that work there have been operating under real duress for a long time. And this is, you know, in many ways because Republicans have refused to fund the system whenever they get into power mm-hmm. In the government, in even a small way, they force these cuts. And it's kind of a one-way ratchet where the number of the workforce never gets rebuilt.
There had been a sort of a lack of clarity, at least as of last week, when you began breaking these stories on whether a 50% reduction in workforce would mean cuts to employees or whether commensurate closures would happen to the more than 1,200 field offices around the country, whether that would happen as well. Have we been able to gain any more clarity on that particular question since your original reporting late last week on this?
Well, no. And this is a really, really important point because it's the difference between the 7,000 person cut uh-huh. that now SSA is saying that's what they're targeting and a much deeper cut of, you know, maybe as many as 30,000 employees. And I find it interesting that the Associated Press, while it reported what SSA has said, which is we're targeting a 50,000 member workforce, and that would mean 7,000 cuts. And they described the 50% proposed cut that I reported uh-huh. as mere rumor. Uh-huh. But the Associated Press in that story said, actually, the cuts might be as deep as 50%. So this is still out there. My understanding from the sources that I have is that this was made sort of intentionally vague. Mm. Whether or not it included the field office personnel or not, they got a lot of blowback. And so now they're sort of retreating to the less invasive position. But that does not mean that they have ended these efforts to potentially have much deeper cuts at this particular agency.
Especially if, as one of your sources said, they're planning to do them in like small buckets in hopes that nobody notices how many they're actually people are fired and offices
right.
closed. Now, as far as I can tell, the Social Security field offices in communities around the country are, short of the post office, really the places that the public actually interacts directly with federal workers, perhaps the most in one sense. You said did you say 10,000 people a day are added to the system?
10,000 people a day turn 65.
Turn 65.
Are eligible, or turn 62, I guess, is the year you can really start. and are eligible to be added to the system. And on average, 120,000 people visit these field offices every day. And as you say, they're located all over the country, mm-hmm. and they are the second largest source of government property, government buildings, consumer-facing buildings outside of the post office. And of course, one of the initiatives that DOGE has been really rabid about is terminating these leases all over the country. If you go to the DOGE website with that leaderboard mm-hmm. of things that they have cut, they've listed 45 different Social Security offices. Now, some of those aren't field offices. They might be contact stations or places where in-person hearings for disability claimants might be held. It's unclear. Some of them say we're negotiating. They're not, you know, it's not totally clear that these have been cut. You got to take everything on that DOGE website with a massive grain of salt. But what we do know is that it contrasts the claims of the Social Security Administration that none of these consumer-facing services will be affected. What we know is that when there is attrition, when there is a reduction in staff at these field offices, people don't get their benefits. They either are too confused to and don't get the assistance they need to sign up, or they face delays in processing, whether it's for disability or survivor's insurance or even the old age insurance that we have. And we know from past experience that thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people will not get benefits as a result of this. And so, you know, Donald Trump can say all he wants, he's not touching Social Security. But if there are tens of thousands of people that are eligible for benefits yeah. that meet all the requirements and aren't getting them, then that is a cut to Social Security in everything but name.
You report that a hearing office, an SSA hearing office in White Plains, New York, is apparently the first office officially scheduled for closure at the end of May. You report that mm-hmm. some 2,200 disability hearings are held annually at this office, and the nearest other office is 135 miles away. Are the DOGE bros under the impression that all of this stuff can simply be moved online, despite the problems that many elderly folks have dealing with, you know, online documentation and so forth? Is there a plan here, as far as you can tell?
A lot of disability hearings are held virtually ever since the pandemic. However, the decision on whether to have a virtual or in-person hearing is supposed to be in the hands of the claimant. And the claimant is supposed to make that decision. So if you're in the area around White Plains, New York, and you're told, oh, you get to make a decision whether you want to do an in-person hearing or a virtual one. And by the way, you have to travel about 130 miles if you do the in-person one. Which one do you think you're going to choose? Right. And so you're depriving individuals of that decision-making process effectively. And, you know, as you say, some people, whether they are older or whether they are, you know, they have a disability that mm-hmm. they're living with, might have difficulty in an in-person, in a non-in-person right. environment,
yeah.
in a virtual environment.
And difficulty traveling 135 miles. You report that other field office lease termination notices that are listed on the DOGE website under various descriptions, but for apparent closure, include large offices in Anniston, Alabama, Gainesville, Georgia, Campusville, Kentucky, Logan, West Virginia, mid-sized offices in Missoula, Montana, Grand Junction, Colorado, Kalispell, Montana, Minot, North Dakota, Rock Springs, Wyoming. These don't seem to be targeted closures in, say, blue states or something like that. This sort of seems like simply a plan for mass closures across the board, system-wide, pretty much everywhere in the country, no?
Well, if you ask DOGE, there have been published reports that they want to terminate all 7,500 leases that the federal government currently holds. So that's going to affect anywhere and everywhere around the country if you're talking about Social Security field offices, which represent one in five of those leases. So, yeah, it's going to have a major effect. Very unclear what it means that a lease is, quote-unquote, terminated on the DOGE website. But I don't think that you can get away with the kind of cuts that are being planned here without affecting the field offices. You know, if you talk to SSA, they'd say, oh, no, we're just streamlining operations. We're dealing with the back office stuff. But a lot of that back office stuff is processing, you know, whether it's applications or disability complaints or things of that nature. So it can't help but affect eventually the front facing work of that individuals have to interact with. And so I really think it doesn't hold water to say that no consumer, no beneficiary is ever going to be inconvenienced by this. It just seems clear that they are.
The Wall Street Journal reported that Acting Commissioner Dudek, an apparent, I guess, sort of a MAGA guy whose appointment by the Trump administration actually meant skipping over scores of more senior people at the agency. But Dudek has proposed using call center employees to replace Social Security Administration workers who staff an 800 number for beneficiaries. That, according to the Wall Street Journal. David Dan, help me understand that. They would, in this case, hire private call center employees from for-profit companies to replace those who are already answering calls from beneficiaries without the need to add a profit margin for private companies to the operation. Does that sound like the plan that they're actually putting in place from your sources?
Well, it sounds like privatization 101, doesn't it?
I mean,
this is what is done when privatizers get in power. They cut spending, you know, they cut workforce to make it look like they're slimming down the federal government, but those tasks still have to be performed, and they're usually performed by outside contractors who are more expensive than if you would do the actual activity in-house. And so this is another example of that. There may be artificial intelligence involved. You may be not talking to a human being at all, but a chatbot. And if you know anyone who is of age of Social Security, that's one thing they love, right? Is talking to a chatbot instead of a human being with expertise in the Social Security system. So I think that this is going to create further delays, further confusion, and loss of benefits in some cases.
And following up on your reporting, David, the most recent chief of Social Security told CNBC over the weekend that the recent actions at the U.S. Social Security Administration are now putting monthly benefit checks for more than 72.5 million Americans at risk. That, according to former Maryland governor and President Biden's former SSA commissioner, Martin O'Malley, he told CNBC, quote, ultimately, you're going to see the system collapse and an interruption of benefits. He added gravely, I believe you will see that within the next 30 to 90 days. Yeah. Ahead of any interruption in benefits, he said, quote, people should start saving now. That's alarming, to say the least. As noted, he was the former commissioner, I guess the last Senate confirmed commissioner that we have under Biden until a month or so ago. Does any of your That's reporting right. suggest that things are necessarily that dire at the agency at this point, as the former Social Security commissioner says they are?
I don't want to rebut him, since he was the actual commissioner of Social Security.
Yeah.
So he is certainly in a position to know. I don't know that it is quite that dire. A lot of the systems of actually paying out benefits to current beneficiaries are pretty automated, and they don't require a huge amount of manpower. That being said, I certainly think, and have been told by people who currently or previously work at the agency, that there is no point at which you could go below the current manpower and still have the same level of service. It's certainly going to be the case that any cuts, whether they're 12%, whether they're 50%, whether they're even less than that, are going to have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that impact is, in my view, probably going to be on people trying to get their benefits, who don't have them currently. But look, I mean, you can't discount what former Commissioner O'Malley said. I mean, he did run the agency, and he's saying there could be benefit delays or mm-hmm. you know, problems with people getting their checks. That has never happened in the history of Social Security. One other thing I would say here is that there is an attempt to implement new benefits right now. You mentioned the Social Security Fairness Act,
yeah.
which was signed by President Biden,
yeah.
Which allows people who were state government and local government employees, teachers, firefighters, police officers, to get a larger piece of Social Security to which they're entitled. I think there could be problems there where individuals who expected to get that increase in benefits don't right away, at least not on the timeline that the Social Security Administration has said would happen, which would be as soon as this week and next month at the latest. I think if you're going to have a significant downturn in staff, that could easily cause delays or even problems with that level of new benefits mm-hmm. that are supposed to be instituted.
Yeah, I mean, especially in an agency that, you know, basically has a 1% you know, cost, administrative cost for what they do. That also means that when you add more things for them to do, there's not a lot wiggle room there. There's not a lot of productivity to be added, it would seem. But finally, David Day, and we've been sort of talking about this quite a bit in recent weeks. Why do you see not just these closures, but these massive cuts to government services across the board? That many of them Trump did not run on. In fact, he said, we're not going to touch Social Security. These seem to be wildly unpopular cuts. Why do you think he is doing those things despite the pushback to not only the specific cuts in programs, but to his own popularity rating? I understand what's in it for Elon Musk. He's getting a lot of favors for his own companies. But what is Trump's game? What is in it for him as far as you can tell? I realize I'm asking you to speculate, but it does not seem to make a lot of sense to me.
I mean, you're making an assumption that Donald Trump knows what's going on with respect to all this. I mean, when you ask, why is he doing this? I guess my question is, define he. It seems like this is all being driven by Elon Musk, that he has this belief that these kinds of workforce cuts are ends in themselves, that punishing the bureaucracy, and here I think Trump might agree, punishing the bureaucracy is a way to make the bureaucracy compliant. And the goal might not necessarily be to provide more efficient service in the federal government, but to intimidate everybody who works in the executive branch so that they'll carry out the bidding of the president and the shadow president, Elon Musk. Mm. I think that is a greater that seems more right to me in terms of why this is happening, is that this is not about efficiency. This is not even about popularity, really. This is about centralizing power.
He also was Scott Bessent, I think, Secretary of the Treasury, said a week or so ago that this is about reprivatizing the federal government. And as we were talking about, you know, with the call centers and all of that, hiring, you know, private companies to do the work that is currently being done by actual government officials, that would also seem to underscore this idea of he calls it reprivatizing. I guess you got to go back a couple of hundred years. But anyway, that question is the jury is still out. You know, Trump may not know what's going on, but he finds out about it and he continues to be supportive of it and, you know, says, I think Elon should be more aggressive. So he may not know about the specifics, but he sure does seem to be standing behind everything that is being done right now. David Dayen, hey, congratulations, and thank you for breaking this story. Please keep up your important work at the American Prospect. You are really doing yeoman's work there as ever. David Dayen can be found, of course, at prospect.org and on the Blue Skies at D Dayen. He also now has his own podcast with Matt Stoller called Organized Money, and his latest book, which you should read, even though I think I mentioned in it, is called Monopolized, the Life in the Age of Corporate Power. David, Dan, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thanks very much.
All right. We're going to, I need to take a quick break here, and we will revisit this extraordinary spectacle out of the Oval Office late last week when Donald Trump ambushed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, ordering him to eventually leave the White House rather than sign an agreement that Zelensky had traveled all the way here amid a war to sign in hopes of moving his war-torn nation closer to peace with its invader Russia and Vladimir Putin, only to see Trump apparently take Putin's side in the negotiations live on television. That story and some of the fallout from this seemingly tectonic shift in nearly 80 years of international relations, that is next. And hopefully, if time allows, your calls in response to what happened on Friday. If you're listening live in Southern California today or anywhere via our live kpfk.org web stream, I hope you'll give us a call, 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
From Russia with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my
goodbye. We're just keeping the tribute to great James Bond music going from Sunday's Oscars out here in L.A. That's all we're doing. Oh, and talking about what appears to be a fully captured by Russia Donald Trump administration as displayed live on television from the Oval Office on Friday. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I'd love to hear from you, 818-985-5735. With your thoughts on what we saw on Friday, let me start here. Conservative New York Times opinion columnist Brett Stevens led his column late on Friday this way. In August 1941, about 4 months after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, Franklin Roosevelt met with Winston Churchill aboard warships in Newfoundland's Placentia Bay and agreed to the Atlantic Charter, a joint declaration by the world's leading democratic powers on, quote, common principles for a post-war world. Among its key points, quote, no aggrandizement, territorial or other, sovereign rights and self-government restored to those who have been forcibly deprived of them, freedom from fear and want, freedom of the seas, access on equal terms to the trade and to the raw materials of the world which are needed for their economic prosperity. The Charter, writes Stevens, and the alliance that came of it is a high point of American statesmanship. On Friday, in the Oval Office, the world witnessed the opposite. Volodymyr Zelensky, Ukraine's embattled Democratic leader, came to Washington prepared to sign away anything he could, anything that he could offer the president, President Trump, except for his nation's freedom, security, and common sense. For that, he was rewarded with a lecture on manners from the mendacious vulgarian and ungracious host, the most so to ever inhabit the White House. A lecture on manners, frankly, is a very nice way to put it. If Roosevelt had told Churchill to sue for peace on any terms with Adolf Hitler and to fork over Britain's coal reserves to the U.S. in exchange for no American security guarantees, it might have approximated what Trump did to Zelensky on Friday. If Roosevelt had said, look, you know, just agree with Adolf Hitler. Let him take the land he's already taken. And by the way, give us access to all of your coal reserves. That's about the same thing that we saw on Friday in the Oval Office. Says Brett Stevens, this was a day of American infamy. Where do we go from here? Good questions. If you have any answers to that question and are in our live Southern California listening area or anywhere else in the world via the livekpfk.org web stream, please feel free to dial in right now to tell me, where do we go from here? 818-985-5735. I have been stunned in many cases with to talk to certain people about what happened on Friday, and they're just not sure. Oh, was Zelensky out of line? Should he, does he have to resign now, as Lindsey Graham has suggested, just 2 weeks after he called Zelensky the hero, the ally that he had always had been looking for all his life? On Monday, Lech Walesa, the former Polish president and Solidarity trade union leader who played a leading role in the fall of communism, signed a letter to U.S. President Donald Trump expressing, quote, horror at his argument with Ukraine's Zelensky. The Nobel Peace Prize winner posted the text of the letter. It was signed by 39 Polish former political prisoners. In an extraordinary meeting that was broadcast live on Friday, Trump accused Zelensky of being ungrateful for U.S. aid, of showing disrespect to his country, and of risking World War III, something that Russia and its strongman leader, Vladimir Putin, has been threatening for years since their invasion of their sovereign neighbor. Russia has largely expressed glee since Friday's Oval Office spectacle. Said Lech Walesa in his letter to Trump, quote, we watched your conversation with the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, with horror and distaste. We consider your expectations regarding showing respect and gratitude for the material assistance provided by the United States to Ukraine in its fight with Russia to be offensive, the letter continued. Gratitude is due to the heroic Ukrainian soldiers who shed blood in defense of the values of the free world. The letter signed by Walesa compared the atmosphere during the meeting to that found in, quote, interrogations by the security service and in communist courts. It also called on the U.S. to fulfill the security guarantees given to Ukraine in 1994 after the breakup of the Soviet Union. Quote, these guarantees are unconditional. There is not a word there about treating such aid as economic exchange, the letter said. Yes, in 1994. And you don't hear this talked about a lot by not just Russia and Putin and his supporters over here in the U.S., but in 1994, the U.S., Russia, China, France, Germany, the U.K., and Ukraine all agreed that Ukraine, which after the breakup of the Soviet Union had, I believe it was the world's second largest nuclear stockpile of nuclear weapons, second only to the U.S., they agreed in 1994 that Ukraine would turn over all of its nuclear weapons, would give them up all of its nuclear weapons in exchange for security guarantees from all of those nations who signed that 1994 agreement, including, by the way, Russia. The guarantee was that its sovereign borders would never be challenged, not by Russia, China, France, Germany, the UK, or the U.S., as Donald Trump's short-lived former communications director Anthony Scaramucci, of all people, helpfully summarized on Elon Musk's X website after the Friday Oval Office disaster. He wrote, here's a recap of the Ukraine situation for those choosing to reject propaganda and continue seeking truth. December 1994, Ukraine agrees to give up its nuclear arsenal in return for security guarantees from the U.S., U.K., France, China, and Russia. February 2014, Russia invades eastern Ukraine and subsequently annexes Crimea. July 2019, Trump administration withholds $250 million in military aid to Ukraine in order to apply pressure to investigate alleged evidence-free corruption by Hunter and Joe Biden. And in February 22, Russia invades a then weakened Ukraine. The world expects Zelensky to flee and Kyiv to fall apart with it, to fall within days. Ukrainians, however, fought bravely for 3+ years, inflicting hundreds of thousands of casualties on Russian army, weakening Putin politically. The U.S. has sent about $70 billion in outdated military equipment to Ukraine since the start of the war, providing opportunity for the U.S. military to modernize its weaponry. 50,000, and by the way, when we modernize our weaponry, that is money spent here in the U.S. About 50,000 Ukrainians have died defending their homeland, protecting U.S. and Western interests in the process. Meanwhile, the U.S. president and VP are calling democratically elected Zelensky a dictator and berating him in the Oval Office in pursuit of a financial payoff, access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals. The U.S., Scaramucci argues, should be thanking Ukrainians who have fought for our common interests with only modest financial support from a country with around $30 trillion in GDP. Slava Ukraina, he adds. I think most folks have probably seen at least some of the attacks on Zelensky by Trump and J.D. Vance on Friday by now, but fewer, I suspect, actually heard what led up to, Vance's...
I'm going to have to end that program there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WFT Associates. So that wraps up this programming of where we're at here on WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. And of course, you can listen to us on our WEFT.org or the WEFT app, which could be found on the Google's Play Store or the Apple App Store on your iPhone or Android phone. So I'm going to play out with some Betty Goodman. Please keep listening, though. Betty Goodman, the Jazz Collector Edition, coming up after this is Radio Theater. But please keep listening here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm queuing up the CD. I had a transition, please keep listening here on 90.1 FM. Have a good night.